Before Garth Brooks and Vince Gill, before Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash, there was the age of the singing cowboys, Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, and lots of local stars all over rural America. Dick Richards of Lake Luzerne in the southern Adirondack Mountains was one of these, hosting and performing on his own radio show in the 1940s.
Well, here's hoping you folks would like that very, very much out there. Well, next here, folks, we got some requests here for Waltz Promenade. We'd like to send this out to Jane Blair, Elaine Gannell, Maggie Hill, Millie Maynard, and there's this Willie. Willie Maynard and Shirley Martin. Well, we're going to turn it over to the control operator out there to play one of Smokey Williams and his Arizona Pals recordings. So take it away, will you, Roy?
Welcome to Meet the Masters. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, your host for this series of conversations with traditional artists from the northern region of New York State, the North Country. Each individual or community group in the series has been acknowledged as Masters of Their Art by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York, an organization dedicated to the preservation and presentation of local folk culture. All these artists have been honored with the North Country Heritage Award and are well-known institutions in their own corners of the region, admired and respected for who they are and what they do.
Waltz your partner around.
Well, you're back in the studio again now, folks. Well, we have a young guest artist here. He's the biggest little cowboy we know around these parts. It's Bernie Jr. He's 5 years old. He is one of the Hudson Valley Ramblers. Yes, sir. He's one of the main gazebos of that outfit. He's going to sing a nice little song for us, Working on the Railroad.
At the time of this broadcast, Dick Richards was 30 and had already been performing publicly for more than 25 years.
Before I went to the school, which was when I was 5 years old, I knew a lot of fiddle tunes and everything on a harmonica. And, of course, I took my harmonica to school with me when I went. I wanted to show the teacher that how smart I was. But... she didn't care much for that. She took my harmonica away from me, and she kept it till after the class was over. Said I was there to learn things that she would teach, not to have me play the harmonica for the class or anything. So consequently, I didn't care much for school at the beginning. But after school hours, the kids all had me playing the harmonica with jigs and reels out in the schoolyard. And as years went by, there was more playing and more, they just never let me quit. And even today, I'm going a couple of days a week. So you might say that I spent 75 years enjoying life.
His penchant for entertaining comes from his family. His father fiddled and worked as a lumberjack, first in the Midwest and later in the Adirondacks of New York State. His mother toured in vaudeville as a singer. After their marriage, the logger and the showgirl settled down in Corinth, New York, and inspired their children with music making.
I feel that I was gifted with music. My family were musicians. My mother was a very, very good singer, sang ballads, and my father, a fiddle player. In fact, my mother met my father in the state of Michigan, where my father was playing, and my mother was on a circuit that took her to some stage shows in Michigan. So around our house, we had music from morning till night, and I learned some songs, of course, when I was real small, and as I got older, of course, relatives and numerous neighbors from different territories around there came to our house, and they'd set up half the night with accordion and fiddle tunes. And so night after night, they'd put us to bed. Well, I'd hear them fiddle tunes till we went to sleep. By the time I was 11 years old, I knew a lot of fiddle tunes and everything. And my dad fell in a barn down across the beam and broke a lot of ribs. So when the square dance caller came to get my father to go and play for a dance that particular night, he said, take Dick, he knows all the tunes. And so I did. They started me out 50 cents a night. And 2 weeks' time, they raised my pay to 75 cents because it's like, well, it'd be the same thing happened today. People came from all over just to see this kid playing a fiddle, you know. Time I was 13, kid fashion, I knew all the calls, and so I played and called too, and I got two men's pay, $1.50. And $1.50 back in those days was quite a piece of change.
Even at an early age, Dick's repertoire of songs was vast, and he continuously added to it. From his parents, he learned comic songs and tearjerkers from vaudeville, Civil War and turn-of-the-century parlor songs, and traditional fiddle tunes. Richards discovered that others, like radio personality Bradley Kincaid, were interested in his collection.
And the only reason that I did learn some of the ones that I did was because they were profitable to me, you might say, Bradley Kincaid was a folk singer that was raised in Kentucky, and he knew a lot of the mountain ballads that people sang in that area of the day, and was good enough, so he got on this WLS in Chicago radio station, which covered a tremendous territory. And then he came to the Schenectady area on WGY, and he moved to bought a piece of property in Stafford's Bridge, which is east of Saratoga Springs. He raised chickens as a hobby, and so one thing led to another, and I went over to Bradley Kincaid's house, and I learned that, if I could teach him a song that he didn't know, he'd give me a chicken. So I used to make it a habit of riding down there on a bicycle, and I'd come home with a chicken. They would kill him, of course, and we had to eat them because it didn't have the refrigeration that you have nowadays. It was just an ice box, and chicken would spoil. And so we had chicken. Well, so my father said, why don't you bring them home alive? And after I decided to bring them home alive, well, I took a burlap bag, and we put the chickens in a burlap bag and tied that onto the handlebars, and I came home with the chickens. So consequently, I learned more songs from my parents.
In fact, Dick has been called a song sponge and is credited with knowing as many as 3,000 songs. His ability soon attracted attention from others in the entertainment business as well. By the time he was 19, he and his younger brother Hugh had been on the Major Bowes Amateur Hour 12 times. The nationally broadcast talent contest, which traveled to cities and towns like Glens Falls, New York, and Rutland, Vermont, probably helped establish Dick's career in broadcasting.
And WGY, the radio station, had a program there every Saturday with just younger people. And they was different entertainers from around places that would be there and sing on that program there on Saturday mornings. And it was a three-hour program. It'd start 9 till noon, and they did advertising in it. And WRGB was the first TV station in the world. And they needed any kind of talent that someone could come up with. And we did two shows. One is hillbillies, overalls and straw hats and anything like that. And one is in Western garb, all so we looked like real fancy dressed cowboys and so forth. And at other occasions, they just maybe sing one song or something like that in a, for a fill-in spot that they needed. But that was their first experience with television.
Thanks to radio and early television, the popularity of country and Western music continued to grow. Near the small town of Fort Edward, Steve Curry finished building a cow barn and decided to celebrate with a big dance. The event was such a success, he put off buying a dairy herd and planned more dances instead. And the rest, as they say, is history.
This barn was a what they call a James Way barn. They have a, it was 110 feet long and 60 feet wide. And the upstairs in the barn was where what would have been designed for hay, which never had any hay in, and they just put some seats along the side, and it made a nice smooth floor to dance on and everything. And they wanted to have a dance on the upstairs there before they put hay and cattle in it. So we had a radio program here on WWSC, and the guy got in touch with us to go down there and play for the dances, and which we did. I wound up being there 6.5 years. And the people came from, square dancing was a real heyday at that particular time. It was in the late 40s, and fellas getting out of the service and into the 50s. And we got acquainted with a lot of people from, they came from Vermont, and even some from Concord, New Hampshire. They came from, down from up north, the Plattsburgh area, and it was really a nice place to square dance.
Bend out your options, straight across, don't get lost.
I think their capacity was 365 or 68, something like that. And we had 500 night after night. And people had their own bottles in the car. And, of course, they sold soft drink there. And I never seen anyone drink to any excess. They probably danced it off. But when troopers come to investigate, they made remarks that they thought it was real nice that people could come to a place like that and have a respectable dance without having to be in some tavern or joint. So even to this day, they don't use the barn except for hay storage. But for a long time, that barn never saw a cow. We made a series. We had three changes of a square dance, and then we'd do three numbers. Usually they were a country western song and a polka, and depending on just what the people liked, of course, it'd be a couple of songs, and maybe just a waltz and a lot of the Hank Williams numbers and of the artists back in that particular heyday there. Eddie Arnold and Roy Rogers, some of the old Jimmy Rogers numbers, and occasionally an old folk song stuck in that people would like, and some of the tearjerkers that I do, and something a little on the funny side, you know. Like the old maid and the burglar, and anything for entertainment.
You are listening to Meet the Masters, and I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald. Today's program features country music pioneer Dick Richards. By the 1950s, middle-class Americans were looking for family vacation sites. Museum villages and theme parks explored Americana, especially that made popular on television and in the movies. It was the salad days of Gunsmoke and Gunfight at the OK Corral.
Frontier Town was this tourist attraction in North Hudson, up Scroon Lake area. In fact, Disneyland got their idea for their park from Frontier Town. They came there and took pictures and everything. And Frontier Town itself, I say, was nothing but a series of log cabins, like a real frontier settlement would be. And I'm quite sure they started in 1952. And they had a church and saddle shop and frontier-type homes and a block house and old muskets and things like that, and the wagons and stagecoaches. They had a makeshift jail and a rodeo. And I used to shoot 4 and 5 shows a day in that rodeo arena. They called it the Davy Crockett Show because I was dressed in buckskins and took part of Davy Crockett.
Frontier Town was not only a tourist attraction, it also was used as a movie set. Big stars of the day like Fess Parker, George Tobias, and Brian Keith did promotional tours that brought them to the park.
And they wanted to make some films for publicity films for themselves with music, so we went making movies with them. We did a lot of insert films for Screen Gems, and they used these films in different, like Stagecoach West and Westward Ho the Wagons and numerous places.
Hey, Shorty, here comes the sheriff.
Well, he sure looks like he's in a hurry. I wonder what's up.
Must be some trouble.
Say, I just got word that Cliff Eagles tracked down them outlaws that held up the stagecoach.
You hear that, Shorty?
Yeah.
You got your horses saddled up?
Sure, let's go.
Take Drag Off Trail down to Horsehead Bend. Okay, boys, let's go.
Brian Keith came to Frontier Town and, they made movies with him, and he wouldn't get up on the stagecoach. He didn't care for the height there and climbing up. So they put a seat down on the floor and had him sit down on that seat, and they lowered the camera way down, and they had some lines that he could hold in his hand, and they'd rock back and forth on the seat, and then show the stagecoach way off in the distance. You couldn't tell who was on it, you know. And we had a lot of fun making movies. My sons would be Indians and cowboys in the same film.
Dick also did promotional road tours. Between 1948 and 1959, he and various bands performed 4 and 5 nights each week at places like Hartford, Connecticut, Syracuse, New York, and New York City. On several occasions, he appeared at Radio City Music Hall and the Hotel Astor, where his band played for square dancing and shared the stage with the Harry James Orchestra. The rule of thumb for touring stars at the time was that no town was too small. They went where the fans were. Days on the road were trying for the musicians, but good humor usually prevailed. Dick remembers one joke he pulled on fellow fiddler Tex Rocky.
He was a pretty good fiddler, but he thought he was quite important, and we were up to a little place up in Vermont, Montgomery, the place. And we had 14 paying customers there. The place was a dirt road off a dirt road to get to this hall. So the people that were serving the lunch, they had homemade bread, and the butter had been on ice, and the butter was lumpy. And so due to the fact they only had just a few admissions, they decided that we would knock it off early, you know. we went down and got some refreshments down at the counter and so forth. And while they were talking, I took some of this butter and I put it on his fiddle bow and put it right on there in good shape. And thinking the next day when we got on a TV show, that would be the first he'd discover it, and the bow wouldn't make any noise on the strings. But it was too good to last, so I said, Tex, how about you playing one of them real nice numbers for the people before we go home? And I said, I'll announce it. And, he loved it, a little pat on the back. So I got up on the microphone and I said, folks, you've heard this. Tex Rocky. Said, you've heard him play all these fiddle tunes and so forth, but Tex has actually studied classical violin. And let's put our hands together and see if we can't get Tex up here to give us his rendition of The Mockingbird. And, they clapped as loud as they could. They thought, well, another couple more tunes they were going to have that night anyway. And he got up there and he took his handkerchief out and he put that under his chin and got that just right and had to stand just so. He made a pass with that bow, and it was just as quiet as could be. The butter piled up on the strings, and he made another pass with it, and his eyes got as big as saucers, I guess. And a fellow by the name of Joey Mayo was sat in a chair that was leaned back, and he got laughing, so he tipped right off the edge of the stage. Well, the stage was only two befores up edgeway with some plywood on top of it. And he had to wash the hair out of them bows and put new strings on the fiddle and everything. And he blamed this Joey Mayo for a long, long time, thinking he was the guy that did it.
By 1959, Dick was 40, married, and starting a family. He'd done radio and TV, acted in the movies, led several bands, and sometimes dreamed of hitting the big time. But after years on the road without making much money, he took a day job at an electronics plant and did music on the side.
20 years ago, I was still working at this electronics plant. I left there 15 years ago, but I was still doing shows with Smokey Green, radio stations, and personal appearances with him. And we did a lot of shows with other artists like Willie Nelson and the Osborne Brothers, and I played bass fiddle with the Osborne Brothers on occasions when they'd come around. And as time went on, I was going to give up playing, and my son says, "Oh, don't quit, Dad." And I said, "Well, the equipment is getting so hard to carry and everything heavy, you know." And said, "Oh, we'll carry all the equipment for you." So, okay, so I kept at it. We became the Richard Brothers and Daddy Dick, and we made a couple of recordings with as that group.
Being 80 hasn't slowed him down much. Current audiences know Dick Richards as a regular performer with the Adirondack Fiddlers Association. He does benefits for the Shriners and other local charities with his brother Hugh, and he plays double bass in a bluegrass band called the Blue Water Boys. He even tells tall tales about leaf-eater rabbits and a 6-foot-tall man-eating chicken when he's out with the Adirondack Liars Club.
We make a practice of going around to nursing homes, and our audience there is a very selected, there's quite a lot of old people, normally. They love the things that we do, the old songs, and they pay a lot more attention than you would if I've played places where if Guy Lombardo come in there, they wouldn't pay any attention to him. In fact, I've said at times if I get too loud for you folks so that it interferes with your talking there, let me know and I'll quiet down a little bit. And sometimes they get the hint and then they be quiet for a minute or two. But then doing a song for these older people is ones that they either knew themselves or their parents sang them, then they remember them real well. And they that's the, about the only entertainment they get that I can say that they'd enjoy. And they make the most of every minute of it, don't they, Lou?
Lou is Louis Strausser from Queensberry. They often perform together.
Now for our next rendition, I suppose you wanted some kind of a tearjerker. How about, in a world's mighty gallery of pictures hang scenes that are painted from life. Pictures of peace and of passion, pictures of youth and of strife, pictures of love and of beauty.
There's something about Dick Richards we haven't told you. Years ago, an industrial accident at International Paper severed his left arm below the elbow.
I was 17 years old, 1936, 2nd of January, right in the wintertime. They took me, it was 15 miles to the nearest hospital, and in a 1932 hearse. They used that for their ambulance. And so even after that, I just had to get the music out of me. And that's all I ever been any good for, something that was entertaining to the people.
It's a picture from life's other side.
Dick discovered that he could still finger the strings using sensitive places on the stump of his left arm and by modifying the position of the fiddle. He practiced until he was able to win a local fiddle contest only 9 months after the accident.
As I rode out in the streets of Laredo.
Years ago, I used to make such an effort to do anything, like playing the guitar or the fiddle or rifle shooting. I did all of this after I lost my hand. And some people resented the fact that I did, but I think it was just because I tried harder than... it's, of course, it's actually a lesson to anybody. If you want to do something bad enough and try hard enough and pray a little, the guy upstairs will help you do whatever you want done.
That was Adirondack fiddler, early radio and TV personality, and country music pioneer Daddy Dick Richards. You have been listening to Meet the Masters, Conversations with Traditional North Country Artists, produced by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York. The series is written and produced by Varick Chittenden and Lamar Bliss. Interviews were conducted by Varick Chittenden, with audio engineering by Lamar Bliss in the studios of North Country Public Radio. Special thanks to Vaughn Ward. The series is supported by a grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund Community Folklife Program, administered by the Fund for Folk Culture and underwritten by the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Research and field recordings were supported by the Sweetgrass Foundation. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald.
We all love this cowboy, although he done wrong.